Hello, this is Jay Nemro. You're listening to The Life Autistic. This is episode number 714. And we're driving through. You know, I have old, not really more memories, but just more feelings. My family came to the eastern side of the state of New Mexico in the United States when I was about 7. We moved here. This was the land that my mother's family had come to just a couple of generations before. I'd come to this land seeking, you know, seeking new opportunities. And, did a pretty good job of it. Took advantage of it. My mom left with my dad. In fact, they had both left. My mom was going to school in Texas. And my dad was in the military in Texas. They went there and got married. And now here's me and my brother. And, when my parents got divorced, my mom ended up coming back here. And I came with her and found I didn't have a really pressing reason to leave, and I really didn't, this place is surprisingly like a lot of other places. It's a little on the dry side, that's true. This is a grassland, it's kind of between grassland and prairie. I would have to say more prairie than grassland. But, you know, there's grass here. When it rains, you can get some green stuff, but by and large, what you see tends to be yellow. Trees here and there, tossing things, not what most people would consider trees. They'd probably call these more bushes, but they actually are technically trees. And they're evergreens. I believe they're mostly junipers. Very short ones. Maybe not. I don't know. They're not pinyons. I don't remember. Anyway, kind of a bushy, evergreen sort of tree, low-lying to the ground. Lots of cactus here. You got lots and lots of cactus, not the big Saratoga type of cactus, you know, the big tall ones that have the limbs that grow out and up. That's not what we have. We have more of like prickly pear cactus, small stuff like that. I see some yucca plants over here. It's the state plant of New Mexico. State flower is the yucca. And, I don't know if that's a good description. When this place was first settled, they put a lot of Chinese elm here. And sometimes you can still see some of it. Over time, they just got disease problems and they've died. Most of them are gone now. Still see them because they're somewhat of a weed tree. You know, they kind of are opportunistic plants, so they tend to kind of be treated along with weeds, same way. But yeah, by and large, I'm looking out here at the old thing. That's what I see here. I'm on the road between Santa Rosa, New Mexico, and Clovis, New Mexico, going toward Fort Sumner, which is kind of in between. And this is a road that I used to travel on. I forget why. But I used to need to go see, when my parents were divorced, and my mom lived in Clovis, and my dad lived either in Albuquerque or Farmington or in Utah or whatever. When I would take trips to go see my father, it would be along this road, at least this stretch of road. So I have a long history with this road. And quite a bit different than it used to be. It used to be much hillier, you know, it'd go up and down a lot harder. And the last time they kind of rebuilt this road, they kind of smoothed it out. They cut big gashes into the ground to take care of the big hills and filled in a lot of the low places. And so now it's much smoother, although you're still going up and down because it's having pretty significant elevation changes here. You know, I think it goes up about 1,000 feet and then down about 1,000 feet along just the stretch I'm on. I see off in the distance here many wind generators. And we have many wind generators here because of both the landscape and the fact that we have pretty good winds here. There isn't a lot to slow the winds down, as you can tell. There isn't a lot of, you know, there's certainly not a lot of tall trees. Mostly just what people would call bushes. Now I'm to a place that almost doesn't have any trees at all, even the trees that we see. All I see is a bunch of cactus everywhere. Interesting. Maybe a few, what do you call it? I guess they are juniper trees. No, it's something. I forget what it is. Mesquite. Mesquite trees. They're considered bushes, too. You'll see some mesquite out here. More toward Tucumcari, not so much here. Anyway, so you have this pretty flat ground, and the wind comes through here pretty fast. There's not a lot to stop it. I've heard tales where back east, eastern United States, where there's lots of water and rain and forests, you know, when they have a bad windstorm, it may be 10, 15, 20 miles an hour. 5, 10, 15, 20 miles an hour out here isn't even noticed. You know, that isn't a wind. That's not even considered a breeze. You know, there isn't considered to be breezy until you got at least up above 20. So you can realize that this would be a really great place to put up wind generators. Because there's usually always a constant, pretty constant wind blowing, typically from the southwest, in our case, blows through, but then when winter storms come, they tend to come from the north, hits from the north. And so we have some interesting things. Right now, since wind energy's gotten kind of interesting, it's become very popular. A lot of people are like wind energy, and we have lots of wind. Not as much as some places, but, you know, some places talk about, oh, it's so windy here, and you go, well, you know, give us a number. We certainly aren't the windiest place. I've done some research, and I really like the wind conditions on the Kerguelen Islands. It's a French possession in South India, the South Indian Ocean, pardon me. It probably has more in common with Antarctica than any place else. High latitude in the Southern Hemisphere. But they get strong winds. I think it's like... in the 50s of 50 south latitude. They get pretty hard winds prevailing, I think, from the east. You know, in the northern hemisphere, prevailing winds tend to come from the west. In the south, the prevailing winds tend to come from the east. So anyway, so they get these really heavy easterly winds. Sometimes it's really, really hard, you know, and the environment there is different from ours here, although it has some similarities. It's more alpine there, you know, so you'll have green meadows during rainy seasons of the year, which we really don't have because we don't really have rainy seasons particularly. This year's been just phenomenally wonderful in that, you know, it's just wonderful how much rain we've been getting. We hope it continues. If this is climate change, if climate change is what's happening this last year, I'm all for climate change because our climate's going to get better. Or at least should be able to support more people. This land here is by and large ranch land. We have very little farmland, technically. At least not in this part of New Mexico. It's mostly cattle ranching here. Sheep ranching never really caught on here. That was something that happened in Texas, the big wars between the sheep ranchers and the cattle ranchers. Sheep herders and cattle ranchers. And cattle won, and as you can tell, we don't eat sheep burgers. We eat hamburgers, which are made of beef, and beef is what we do. Although I think sheep probably have more to offer us than cows do. Cows are primarily just meat and... and pretty rough leather. And sheep can offer you those two things. Plus you can... Oh no, I'm sorry. There's also milk from cows. Cows are pretty prestigious milkers. Prodigious milkers. If you get the right variety of cow. Those are, you know, I come from cattle ranching, which has nothing to do with dairy. We tend to be very cow-oriented here. You know, some people raise sheep, but sheep doesn't even come close to the kind of market that cows offer. Cool. But you know, sheep can do so much more. You can milk them. Their hair is worthwhile. Cattle hair is pathetic. You know, it's too short really to function as anything else. And you tend to just want to strip the hair off because you want to get to the leather underneath. You know, you have sheepskin too. You can do it without actually having to shear the sheep. And there's another viable product from sheep. So I think sheep is a much more marketable animal. But cows do better out here. I guess sheep need probably more water than we can probably muster. I don't know. Have to ponder that. We're a very dry area, relatively speaking. Alright, so that's what's here. I've studied a little bit of the history, not a ton, of my region. When I was living in Clovis as a young man, Clovis is kind of part of the Llano Estacado, the Staked Plain. This was known as the Great Southwestern Desert at one point for just its lack of water. Although much harder deserts lie to the west. This was probably the last settled part of the United States. The Homesteading Act was last enacted here, in this little part of New Mexico. Because it looked like it would be pretty good farmland, given the fact that it could grow grasses pretty well. Of course, the whole issue was, if you caught it on the wrong year and you saw it when there was lots of rain, it looked very promising. But those years don't happen but maybe once every 10 years. And then you go into the next drought cycle. The drought cycle goes on for 10 years. You know, you have a good year and then you have 10 not so good years. And you really can't be much of a farmer that way. So here, if you really want to be a farmer, end up being a irrigation farmer, which is tricky here because you have to pump the water up from a great distance in the ground, unless you're next to a river. Tucumcari has two artificial lakes nearby it, and there was a lot of work earlier in the 20th century to, you know, make it more productive farming land. So a lot of irrigation projects was started. The Arch-Hurley Irrigation District began, and a lot of land was then irrigated from artificial lakes that were built in the early 20th century. Also brought some recreation possibilities, stuff like that. But I have to tell you my own family's personal history. My mother's family came to New Mexico just at the turn of the century. The turn of the 20th century. And my great-grandfather, actually my great-great-grandfather, grandparents on my mother's side, came and acquired land here. There was already other families here, and we married with those families, so we have roots in this region. Go back quite a ways. On one side, cattle ranching, although on a somewhat small scale, and dry land farming, which is tricky here. Dry land farming, you don't depend on that for your livelihood. You take advantage of it for like added feed for your cows and stuff like that. That's what it ultimately ends up being, is trying to produce high protein feed for your cattle. It isn't really raised, you know. We grew dry land wheat in a section of our pasture and tried to keep the cows out of it, and it really kind of depended, you know. You would either sell that wheat if prices were good and things went well, or you would just set the cows loose on it and let them eat the grain. That was kind of what it ultimately came down to, is how it kind of worked. So it was kind of a secondary crop that might give you some extra money, but you never really counted on it particularly. Or at least I never got the impression that my family did. Anyway, ranching. My grandfather on my mother's side, he did many things. He was kind of he did several things. He used to run school buses for the schools. He ran a small dairy. He acquired some land and had a dairy. He was an electrician. And so he was kind of I wouldn't say jack of all trades, but he had several things that he did to keep himself, you know, keep himself going. And that tends to be kind of, you know, we got out of ranching. There, you know, in this part of the world, you have to have a significantly large ranch. My family had a 5,000, or at least when we finally sold it, it was approximately 5,000 acres. It was a bit bigger before, but already some land had been sold off to other people, you know, by members of the family that wanted the money more than they wanted the land. And ultimately, we all sold it off to. For the, you know, for good reasons. For the longest time, my great uncle was the rancher, even though he was actually a vice president of a bank in town, you know. So his ranching was something of a avocation as opposed to his vocation. I think he still did okay. You know, he didn't suffer. I think he did it mostly for the relaxation parts of it. And you'll find that still true. A lot of people do that. You know, a lot of ranchers tend to get into banking, you know, because that's definitely something they have to be involved in, you know. Whether loaning money, because it's always better to be the guy loaning the money to people than the guy having to get loans. My great-great-grandfather, as far as I'm aware of, and as far as my uncle, W.A., talked about, my great-uncle, he, you know, as people would come here with the Homesteading Act and get their 160 acres of land, 160 acres of land was nothing here. It still is. It still is absolutely nothing. You can't grow anything of any significance. You can't, you can have maybe, you know, 6 or 7 cows on it. That's probably on the low side, but not significantly. People back east, when I would say things like, oh yeah, our family has 5,000 acres, they would just go, oh, wow, that's huge. And you go, that's nothing. We've got one of the smallest outfits. Certainly nothing that could take care of things. It took care of my great-grandfather. It supplemented the income of my great-uncle. And it wasn't going to produce anything near enough to take care of our needs. You know. Not that we were in any position to take over that operation. My dad thought about it once, and it just wasn't going to be lucrative enough for him. And I understand it completely. Because this is a big stretched out thing. Like, I'm looking right now over quite a large territory. Probably, you know, a few hundred acres is what I can see in front of me. And I don't see one cow. You know, cows travel around in bunches, in herds, I guess you could call them. Although I think that's a little disingenuous given the way we do cows now. But I don't see them. There may be some over there, but I think those are trees. Okay. At least what passes for trees over here. Okay. No cows. Zippo. None. In this whole territory, you know. A group of cows will go and they'll stay together and they'll graze together, but they tend to graze in different places. You know, you tend to go for the grass that you like best, and wherever that grass is, you just kind of take it, and that's the way it is. But, I don't know. Well, you guys always know that I have some pretty interesting podcast episodes sometimes. This is definitely one of them. But that's just kind of the way it is here. You know, I've done some research, and I think this area has a lot in common with, say, for instance, Inner Mongolia. Now, that's part of the provinces of China now. I'm not talking about Mongolia, the country, which is actually was called Outer Mongolia, the independent country, although I thought that might be a good place to go just because I'm familiar with the climate a bit. I think it's a bit colder there. I think Outer Mongolia has more in common with, like, further north, like Wyoming or the Dakotas, Montana type area. Although I've just recently come from up there. It's cold up there. It's just dang cold. But a whole lot like here, you know. You won't see cows very often, but you just gotta know that cows are here. You know. You tend to see more civilization here, more houses, more more power lines because it's just warmer here and you can accomplish more here than you can on those huge ranches that you'd have up like in Wyoming, where it's just, you know, bitterly, frozen cold. This is a good thing for my wonderful wife, whom I love with all my heart. She would be the first one to say, you know, this is probably a good medium place for her, is somewhere around here, just to make it so that she could have a nice climate that she likes. It doesn't get horribly hot here, and it doesn't get horribly cold particularly. You know, it's somewhat moderate here. There's a place you can go to where it doesn't, you know, about 200, 300 miles south of here, that rarely get cold. You know, that their coldest day will hit a low of, you know, 50. But there's places just north of where we live where it gets really cold. You know, they have much harder seasons than we do. So this land's a pretty good mix, as long as you don't put too many people on it, because we have very little natural occurring water. You have to wait for the rains to come. We do have a couple of rivers, but most people wouldn't call them rivers. They'd call them streams or creeks or whatever. Let me see, is there anything else I can talk about this land? Anyway, it's got some good things to it. I think it's a good energy producing thing. Also, the soil here isn't particularly good. You know, it's good for grass. Any other kind of cultivation that you do, it just isn't going to support it very well. It just doesn't have it. When it was first called the Great American Southwest Desert, you know, people weren't particularly kidding. You know, that's just the way it is. Although right now it's a grassland. When you go up to the land, you can see that there's clumps of grass, but there's dirt in between those clumps. This is not a lawn type of situation. This is just definitely clumps of grass that grow up opportunistically. Anyway, so. Let me see, do I have anything else to say? You know, I really don't. I would like to start a new nation where I am, which is here, but, you know, what kind of resources do we have here besides wind? We have tons of sun. There's nothing to block the sun here. And we don't get a lot of cloudy days, so we tend to have lots of good days. So it's good for solar. It's excellent for solar. What else is there to say? Yeah, I don't know. We have a lot, I think, at least in Tucumcari where I am, it seems like there's a lot of natural gas underneath it. We have the proper kind of strata, and a lot of natural gas is collected there, and we could probably profit quite handily from how much natural gas we have, although it has not been exploited. It's here, but it's just not being tapped. You know, when people say, oh, we don't have any energy, why, we have to get it from somewhere else, and you go, no, it's just always been easier to go somewhere else to get it. We have energy here, we just don't choose to use it. Whether it's for environmental reasons, environmentalists, or for whatever other reason, we don't want to see a whole lot of ugly-looking things around us. Which I can't say much of with all these, you know, I can look now, and when I was talking about that the terrain was right for wind generators, we have mesas here. As far as scientists know, and I think they probably have at least a pretty decent beat on this, this land was underwater long, long, long ago. Maybe it'll be again. I don't know. But, you know, it was underwater, and with the erosion of that water, subsequently after that, it's been mostly wind, but before that it was water, we have these mesas. I guess they used to be islands, or upheavals, or whatever else they were. And when you put these wind generators on the edge of these mesas, these plateaus that we have, it really raises that thing's height, you know. You tend to put, like, radio antennas on high places. We have plateaus where we put our radio antennas because it gets them up high. That's where we put our water tanks, is up on top of mesas whenever we can. Because then, you know, you don't have to try to build an artificial one. If you're someplace terribly flat, like Kansas, for instance, you know, you have to have a water tower. You actually have to build an artificial tower to raise up a water tank to give you enough pressure, to give you pressurized water that people like to have for their water system. Us, we don't, we sometimes we can get away without having to do that because we have some elevation changes. And you can take advantage of that. You can just have a regular old water tank somewhere and let it flow down the hill to wherever you need it to be. But anyway, yeah, maybe you get kind of a picture of how this thing is. Ranch, grassy land, not the most fantastic grassland, but pretty decent. And cows. Although, like I said, I still don't see any cows nearby. Because that's the way it goes. This land can only carry so many cows without getting destroyed. So even though you may have a very large acreage, you really can't run a ton of cows on it. At least not in relation to how many cows can be put on like an acre in back east, you know. A 5 acre, you know, five acres in on the east coast of the United States would probably be considered a pretty sprawling ranch. That's pretty big. Not really, but you can have 7 or 8 cows, I guess, on that. Maybe even 10. Because, you know, there's plenty of water. You can grow amazing hay. And the cows eat the hay, and they eat the green stuff, and it works great. You know. Where I, for instance, can't do any of that. You know, I can't do any of that. I mean, it may be great to have all this huge amounts of land, but it doesn't really lend itself to heavy cultivation or heavy use. This is very light use land. You can't use it for too much. Anyway, this is Jay Nemro. You've been listening to Life Autistic. This episode number 714. Have a great day.